accession number 9339, reel 11.
Mr. Holbrook, Reel 11. I'd like to look at the conditions in the trenches in the evening.
Yeah, I'll go on to that. Well, when we were, while I was still at Kemmel, I found a better route going up to Kemmel. They moved a bit up to the right, actually, down there. So I found a better route that was going up straight up the main road from Kemmel village up to almost to the trenches. Well, at this particular time, I remember going up one night at the end, and what I used to do during the day, if I could scrounge anything in the village, such as pigeons and those, because the village was full of wild, like pigs and chickens and all sorts of things, where the people cleared off and left them. There was only one man in the village there, and he was an elderly man, but we could really take what we wanted and cook it ourselves, like kill a pig and that sort of thing. You see, the only people down there was, I think I was the only one my resident, but the signalers were down there, and wonder where all the people were down in Kemmel, you see, they'll go on different messages, all these and do that. And I used to catch these pigeons. Is it all right then, is it? Mm. I used to catch these pigeons and pluck them, you know, and boil them and take them up to this Pippin. I used to give him a couple of pigeons tonight, see if I could get up there with him. And he used to love that. I can remember seeing him sitting at the end of the trench, only in a very deep trench, with his old woolly hat on, you know, sitting there like, and I'd get up there about winter time, about six, I suppose. And if he saw me coming around the trench, he said, oh, he used to clap his hands. And he said, what have you got? I said, I've got some pigeons. And I'm like, oh, he used to say, it's pigeons. So anyway, done that one night, I got a petrol can, made a handle, you know, made a kind of a bucket for a petrol can to carry stuff in and cook in, that sort of thing. And I got these pigeons in, you know, about four pigeons I got that night on my own. And they dropped a shell on the road, on the train road, and it made a big shell hole there, and that was all right. I get by on the right, but it just like my. Well, the day after, they dropped the shell right on the side, with the side of it. So they touched one of these big shells, right? It comes the whole of the road. And where people walked up in the dark, they walked on the edge of it, you see, made a little pathway about 6 inches wide over the two. Because they were full of water, by the way, these shell holes, that time of year, you know, January. And I went up this night with these can of pigeons for him, and take the messages up when they come through during the day. And going over this shell, I fell in. I stepped down the side of this and tipped the pigeons, these pigeons into the water, dirty old muddy water, you know, the shell all water in there. And I thought, this is all right. Anyway, I managed to save some of the liquid out of it. I fiddled about, all in the dark, fiddled about this in this deep old shell. I found these pigeons at the back of, right at the bottom of my mud and dirt. I got them out and washed them in the dirty old water, you know, and put them back. Up I go with him, give me his messages. He said, what have you got? I've got some pigeons. I said, I didn't know I dropped them. I said, not too warm. Never mind, he said. I could see him there. He pulled out the first one and got them, pulled it in pieces with his bare hands and he did raw with me. You know, there was nothing with it. And then it went into a dirty old shell hole. Oh, it was good. The first time I went there on by the road, that way up, I lost my way in the front line, towards the front line, or might be the reserve line. And wandered into a kind of a dugout sort of place. It had been occupied by the French. And they trained all their wounded and dead in it. All their dead in it. So when I went in the dark, I was walking on to find out where I got to go. I didn't know where I got to go, really. I was looking one place or another. I looked in, I touched something in the dark. It was a dead person. I looked in there. It was full of dead Frenchmen. They trained their dead in there. And I walked on, I found out where Pippin was, and of course that was that. Well, then we moved from there to, this is Linden of Trenches. We moved then to Kemmel, and Kemmel was a bit better. It was the trenches were a little bit deeper, drier, and cleaner. You know, they'd been occupied. The Linden of Trenches had been occupied by the French, and they were dirty, you know. But ours were different. Where the British had been were looked after and cleaned.
How wide were they?
Oh, about feet. Another person could put them. Well, some was only about 18 inches wide, some would be at 2 feet. You see, different parts where they meant to get through the earth easily, but to be wider. But it wasn't too wide. You could only really squeeze through. If one person passed another, it was. If a fellow was at a firing point, firing platform, and another fellow wanted to pass him, it was very narrow. Especially if you've got any. Carrying any bags or things like that, so no, any stuff there.
And you said earlier they're about 5 or 6 feet deep at Kemmel.
Yes, yes.
Have they developed any of the sophistications of trench warfare, like traverses or fire
steps? Oh, not then. Not at Kemmel, no, no. So we got most of the Somme front. It wasn't Ypres either. And there's no communication, especially with Ypres. I'll tell you about when we're back to Kemmel.
Did the troops in the front line have any sort of accommodation or dugouts?
No, not Kemmel trenches, nothing.
Where would they sleep then?
It's just where they in the trenches. Lie down, lean against the parapet, perhaps, and that sort of thing, you see.
What about the officer?
There might be a bit of a shelter. He was very poorly fixed, the Kemmel.
What sort of a shelter might he have?
Well, whatever, one of his sandbags or anything over in the wood, perhaps over, and some sandbags over the top of it. There's nothing. You could have given some of the rain or anything like that. You might be able to have a bit of a shelter, but nothing really much there of Kemmel.
What about you yourself? Where did you actually sleep? Because you were going backwards and forwards.
When I got to Kemmel, I stopped there. Kemmel was a bit further away towards Ypres, and then of course I had to go up the line then. I stopped there. I was still an orderly, but being orderly in the line in the Kemmel trenches.
So you would sleep at the bottom of the trench?
Oh, yes, same as what the other troops were.
Was that very uncomfortable, or did you get used to it?
Oh, we got used to it, I think. It was very cold, you know, and wet. Of course, everything was wet on you. Everything was soaked through, you see, and it was very, very cold. And people... Because I couldn't stand this. We got issued with what they call long johns, you know, the pants where you had to wear the... but I couldn't wear them. I used to itch so, I couldn't wear them. So my mother used to send me out some little calico knickers, a sort of made of calico like that, and I used to wear those. And the fellows in the trenches would say to me, it's the middle of winter, mind you, 1914 winter, and I'd say, yeah, the damn deal, you could stand in the bloody trenches and say with those little things on, and in the bloody bit of coal, I don't know. And I said, what am I doing? They'd be bit with those damn lice.
Did you get any other extra clothing issued to help deal with the winter?
Not the first winter. No, in fact, we didn't have our tin helmets first winter.
So you'd just have your great coat, would you?
Yeah, so the great coat.
Did they have ground sheets by then?
No. No ground sheets, just had your great coat. No ground sheets, anything of that, but they come off afterwards. So you really didn't take the things off. Well, you couldn't, could you? And you said, you're so muddy and wet and that sort of thing, you know, and of course your hands were filthy, never washed. And the job was really to get your rifle in working order against this mud, and you should get on the bolt, and that's why you have to clean the get it off your fingers, and get so you can jog the bottom down, and all that sort of thing. You should get a little oil, you know, bottom of the rifle, little oil bottle. But it was a hell of a job I was firing. And
with the cold and the wet, did you have any problem with frostbite or trench feet or any that sort of thing?
I didn't, but a lot of fellas did. Yeah, some very, very bad. I was seen crying out with the pain of it there. When I'd be helping someone take their boots off, they swollen so that they were agonising for them. They'd go sick, of course, a lot of them did. But there's the only thing I saw that affected the troops was, of course, shells affected them. Shells, like in the screen of the shells and that sort of thing.
We'll come to that. Yeah. Was there any precaution that you took against trench feet or frostbite?
Well, they had not the... It might have been the first winter. They issued some what they call whale oil. It was oil in cans used to come up, thick, made from the oils of whales. And every man was supposed to go just behind the line, to take relief, you see, to go one man at a time. And he had to rub all this whale, thick old grease or fishy whale, all over his feet and knees like that, you see, and put back his socks. But the funny part about these socks were soaking wet. And when you put the whale oil on you, you've got to put back the dirty old thick old greaves, the wet socks again. So it's really not much good to you because you've got soaked through again. You're still walking on in wet socks and boots. And of course, your khaki clothes were wet. Your overcoat was full of mud. We used to go into the trees, it's all thick mud. And the bottom one was so heavy the wet, they used to knock against the legs and these, because they all got muddy and wet and heavy. So he's wet from there downwards, saturated. Then upwards, you've got your dirty old overcoat on. The coat was so thick with mud that one day you scrape it off with a knife and go down like peeling a lemon or orange, and like peeling all this mud from top to bottom of your coat. And that, because it's wet all underneath, but it never dried, it never got that dry at all. When you went out to rest, of course, it dried a bit, but...
What about the freezing conditions? When it froze, what effect would that have on the life?
Well, it was very, very cold, of course, and you had job smashing water, because you didn't allow it to freeze in the water in the trench. You kept it, moved them, you know, stamped it out and all that sort of thing, so it didn't freeze. But above the top of the parapet, it's very frozen. Hard, sometimes the sand legs were absolutely hard. And you couldn't do much really firing really from the top. On a very cold wintry day, you couldn't do very little firing. Machine gun fire took place, but I did a rifle fire.
Did you have any trouble with, you know, with the freezing cold, with your clothes freezing, or with people dying of exposure overnight? You know, because you're sleeping at the bottom of the trench.
People were taken down frozen. You know, they couldn't move their joints hardly, but. I never saw him be actually frozen, died from frostbite, nothing of that. They was really taken down before they were really got too bad. But that was the job getting them down, you know, because there's no communication trenches. And the men, there was no ambulance men there, of course. All the wounded and all the sick were taken down by their own men.
What sort of washing facilities did you have?
Nothing. Nothing. From the time he went into the trenches, which usually that part was usually 4 days on the front line, 4 days in reserve, 4 days in support, and 4 days on the village back of the line. That's 16 days. So every 16 days, well, after time, things got so bad that you were up on something 12 days at a time. In fact, one part of the line, I was on there 30 days in the front line, that a whole month. But the camel in that place there, we did, say, 4 days in, 4 days out. And in that time, of course, you couldn't change your things at all. Well, even the support line, and front line, of course, terrible. You couldn't move them out. You could hardly move your hand above them. As soon as you move your hand above them, move back, the sniper got, you know, the other side, same as our side.
What sort of latrines did you use, or did you build any latrines?
No, not there. The only place was the back of the trench, where you could crawl back the trench and do what we want to do there.
So it was a risky business.
Oh, yes. You didn't go out until you were forced to. Of course, I could tell you something, if you should put it down there or not. But all those would be late in the war.
Would you be issued with any paper or anything to use?
What, so you get the toilet? Well, what have you got on you? There's nothing issued, of course. Nothing issued. I could tell the story about that. It's taking like a short one. And then all he got was his pound note and his ration card. And you got no papers, but he didn't know what to use. Well, he used the toys. That was ration card. No, there was nothing, no paper, no nothing like that. There's no facilities at all. Not for nothing, whatever.
Did you have any problem with rats or any other rodents?
Yes, rats you did. Rats were very bad. They were, at night time, you could see them. Say on a moonlight night. On the sandbags, you can see them. They just move like great fat things. They say, eat the body out in front, you know. And they should waddle along great fat things. And then you told me, well, I've heard this. We were, of course, with ammunition, his wife. We put him with an inch of them. I got bumped to pieces, you know, from a rifle fire. Because they wouldn't move. They was too fat to move. They just waddle along. And in the moonlight, of course, there's absolute targets within about 3 or 4 inches of you. And I can tell you, I'm sorry about the later on, though. Yes, then of course they eat these bodies in the front, and all the bodies in the front. There's your horrible thing. And I don't know if you want to put this down or not. But I saw one night, morning, I was looking at it, and I saw this body move. It's only, I suppose, well, I didn't see it. I could see it all in the far away. His body, and I saw this rat come out of his mouth. It's come out of the man's body. But generally speaking, they weren't much trouble in the trenches, but it's on. Outside and on top of the trenches.
Now, they didn't come into the trenches
then? Sometimes they would. They'd get away, they'd scuttle, as you see, an object in the dark or light scuttling along the trenches, a rat or something. I think sometimes they'd nibble at something. Oh, you couldn't have any food there, of course, if you had any biscuits. And if there's a food to show them about, they'd have that. They'd nibble those, you see, so it was always about. Otherwise, I'd not trouble with them, because you got used to everything. That's the point. You see, you're so used to seeing people lying dead, or so seeing getting wounded, so people falling from the trench, from the cold, and you're getting help them out. So used to it, they should have took no notice of it. It was a common everyday occurrence. And
what about lice? Did lice appear at this stage?
They were nasty. Lice were nasty. I didn't like them, but not people. Yes, they were so big, they were kind of a black, whitish-black sort of lice, and fairly big, and they get all under your arms and between your legs. That's why I tell you, I couldn't wear those long pants, my mother used to, that's the reason. And they never got me, because they were too cold. But anyway, I remember one night, I was at, it's a camel, I was lying down in the trench of Vrestock, and I felt a bump in my ear, get bump, 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 bump. I couldn't make out what it was. Hell of a noise. So I said to the fellow, I'm off in a Nazi fellow in my ear. He keeps bumping the face like a big drum in my head. So he said, can you get, is there anything in there? I said, I don't know. I said, nothing, get out. So he got an old fashioned watch key. Got his other go. There they go. So I held it down like in the light from the star shores. He poked that. A damn great light's come out. It's walking on the drum on my ear. It's all of a sudden got out to the right. Yeah, the rice were very bad. They were got round your legs and that, and on your food. And the shirt, I'd taken my shirt off at night, and a little candle, which they all did, a piece of candle, and turn the shirt inside out and run the seams along like a burner ball, crack, 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 they go like that. And then you turn it inside out, put them back, and in the morning, she'll be somewhere. You couldn't get rid of them. And I took my memory, it's like nice. I got home on the yard and said about something like that. I'll tell you about last night on that, because it doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
But that's all. The lice were very bad, of course, the cold, and your fingers being muddy and something you couldn't do much with, and they were stiff. And all with the fire rifle. The trouble was the rifles were muddy, your fingers were cold and frozen, and you couldn't, to pull the trigger something was hard.
With all these things, what was the overall health of the troops like, and what was your own?
Fairly
health?
Good, fairly good. They were. The scroungers that want sick, they didn't go sick. You know what's wrong with them? There's dozens. He's try to get out, going up the line. He's going up the camel trenches. The first time Linda trenches. The first time they moved for me, the first time there. Say the first month or so. Pepper, our captain, used to about a mile or so from the trench. He used to meet the troops and say, "Now, anybody wants to go sick?" So, of course, there's no anyone to go sick at all. And so, I can see him now. He said, "Nothing that with you." I've got pains in the backs and I feel so and so. Well, I'll see. Now, you take two of these, Pepper would say, and you'll be all right. And he goes, next time, go better. The hat and time, Pepper says, he got the pains in his shoulder and his neck, so, all right. Now, if you take two of these, he's going to be two number nines, they were called. Two of these number nines, they all went up the line. There's nothing wrong with them, really, and everything. And they could.
So, what about your own health? How was your
very
health?
Good. Oh, yeah, very, very good. I didn't go sick or anything. I didn't see a doctor, I suppose.
Was there no dysentery or anything like that?
I didn't have it. No, I was very, very good. I was very, very good, really. And people used to say to me, damn, nobody can stop me. Bloody trench, like it, never go to report sick. I was like, I'm all right. I used to say, but no, I had very good health. I can't remember. I never been to hospital once, and it's well in the war, it was. It's a short time.
What about rations? What rations would you get? What did you get to eat while you were in the front line around about Kemmel?
Well, of course, you got nothing cooked. Nothing cooked at all, and nothing hot. And no tea or anything. So see, all you had was water, which you used to go down every night. So many men were taken out the front line, and go down to the dump. The dump was about the nearest the transport would get with horses, because they were valuable horses. They couldn't come too near the trenches for shedding. But you go down about 4 miles away to the dump. So many men out of the company go down. There's no communication trench those days. You only walk over the top, walk right down, all through this bloody mud. And then you pick up your rations, which consist of water in petrol cans, and biscuits in boxes, and ammunition. That's all you took back. Your biscuits, hot dog biscuits, and cans of water, and the ammunition. And that took you something like 3 hours to get there and back, more than that sometimes, starting to feel the bottom to get back with it. And then, of course, the troops were hungry. They get out of these biscuits like till tomorrow, until the next night. That's all they had, nothing more. They had the whole of the time I was that part of the line, or most of the time, I never had a hot cup of tea. Never.
So you didn't get tins of bully beef or anything like that?
No, we got bully beef at times we did, but that particular bit of time we didn't. Even then, see, it was a job that would be. It was waiting to carry up too, tins of bully. But now they used to get the biscuits and the water, and the damn water was in petrol cans, and sometimes these petrol cans hadn't been washed out properly. So when you pour the water, it tastes of the petrol. It always tastes of petrol, always, but sometimes worse than others, you see, because it was put in these cans, and of course, these cans never went back much because they were used. If you ever get, sometimes they'd have rats and come up from home, perhaps they get the post now and again, not very often, but perhaps they'd have the post, but those down in the support line, never in the front line. Then they'd undo the pot and share what was there, and we should use the petrol cans, take the top off them where the handle was, bend that down, and use that as an oven. And dig up the trenches, make a bit of a fire with wood, the old duck boards, and make a fire, and used to cook a bit of stuff there, so warm it up, or things like that. So they all shared, but it wasn't very often. It was most always bully beef, biscuits, and the water, of course, petrol water.
So you would get bully beef up sometimes?
Sometimes, oh yeah, sometimes. I didn't get any camel way, no. As I say, the only thing we had...
What were the biscuits like?
All those though hard, broken, like a dog. A dog's biscuit. I suppose about 4 inches square, and thick like that. And it was hard. You had to break it with the butt of your rifle or something to eat a bit of film because they lasted a long while. chew.
And how would you have enough of these to keep you from being hungry?
Oh, he's always hungry. But there's never any line about on his spare. You wouldn't find his spare ones about anywhere. The issue with one you'd. If you the issue with it, was that.
How about the water? Was there enough water for you, or would you go thirsty as well?
Well, I went thirsty. You weren't allowed to drink. You take your petrol cans up from the dump at night. It'd be two cans to a piece of string or something over your shoulder. You'd have a carry of water like that, these two petrol cans of water. Well, when you get up there, the officers used to take charge. You couldn't have that can of water and drink it as you wanted to. Well, they wouldn't do that. You should put it at the part of the trench, and you issue out the water so much to a man who's thirsty. And the only time we got any action was when there's nobody about there, the scrams would drop out the petrol can, so there's nobody about and have the drink quickly out. You're not supposed to do that, of course. But this particular night, I saw this can of water, and there's nobody looking, nobody around, so I then drank it. I drank about half a pint of it. I drank petrol. It was all petrol. I had a good inside. I drank about a couple of pints of petrol. So there's been a can of petrol there, I don't know the reason. Because I didn't know it was cold and icy, and I didn't know that. I didn't taste it. I pointed down the throat like that. It wasn't until I called Billy Petrol. I didn't feel the effects of it. No, I was very healthy, really.
Did you get a rum ration at all while you were at camp?
Sometime, not so early in the war. We got occasionally, not too much. We didn't get one every night, anything like that. Probably might be just for an attack. They give it to you, that's all. You wouldn't have much in the trenches. The sergeant come along with a bottle, his arm would be that, water trench. And you're one of those sergeants, he used to eat out with a tablespoon, a big tablespoon. He'd pour it out, so he'd have a couple of men with him, pour it out, drink and give it to you. If it's drinking some raw rum, people, like I was never used to it, but I soon got used to it. And on this particular night, this sergeant came around, had your petrol, had your. Rum, no sergeant. So he said, haven't you had some before? He said to me, I'd had some about 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes before, you see. So he said, haven't I given you some before? I said, no, sergeant. Let's smell your breath, he said. So, go on. Yes, we had the rum. Wasn't too often. But it was neat rum, strong rum. You never been adulterated at all, nothing. And he'd knock it back a couple of spoonfuls of that. But before the attack, it took about half an hour to get ready to feel fit.
What about cigarettes? Did you get any?
No, I didn't smoke. We didn't get any.
Did you get any other rations at all brought up to you?
What, cigarette?
Of anything, was anything else brought up to you in the line?
Nothing. All we got was what we got from the rat dump the night before. All that the men could carry, they carried. That was consisted of the water, ammunition, biscuits, and occasionally, I suppose, you might get a tin of bully, that's all. But no such things as tea, sugar, milk, anything like that.
Did they have any of the McConaughey's or anything like that then, pork and
beans? No, we didn't get those till the... Oh, pork and beans we got, but not the, what we called McConaughey. It was a tin of meat and potatoes and vegetables. Yeah, cooked, it'd been cooked, tinned, and then we used to get vegetables out to us, and they used to make a hole in and put them on an old brazier or wood fire and hot them up. But that wasn't long after, the first 8 months of the war before we got those. There's no other food whatever. You've got you never got any tea, and for months and months and months you never got any sugar or milk. Everything like that. If you had your tea, it was all tea boiled up and strong and nothing with it. But then you did get those in the trenches. There's only when you get out after. You got nothing whatever. You had nothing whatever regarding food or drink beyond, as I tell you, the cold water and the army biscuits.
Would you take water from shell holes or from the bottom of the trench?
Yes, yes. If we couldn't get any, we did. Yes, yes. If we could manage to... That was when the outer line, or in the reserve line, because you couldn't make a bunch of fire in the front line to hot it up, really. But often in the reserve and support lines, you could get a canteen of shell water and get inside and warm it up. You wouldn't believe this. On the Ypres front... We were thought 34 men was taken, just before Kemmel. We got a drop of water, but it had been snowing hard. And I said, I scraped the snow. We got our canteens, you know. I scraped the snow from the dirt, and put in the water. I had a matchbox. I remember a bright made matches, almost full of matches, and I got some bit of metal stuff was lying about there behind the trees. It's night time, of course, and made a bit of a shell, and I made a bit of a stand, and I melted this snow. I got this box of matches on the side of it, and I stripped the matchbox of the matches I get and put it on there. So there's a little flame about that. As it was going down, I put another little box on the box, stripped it down, and I boiled this snow. And when the snow boiled, of course, all the mud came on the top of it like it did, and because there wasn't much in the snow, I go and get some more snow. Then we got a canteen full of water, and I boiled this canteen full of water on a box of bright maize matches. I stripped it down and boiled it. You'd never believe it. And I told them they wouldn't believe it. It wasn't a full box either. But the matches was in it, and the strip in the box down there, we kept putting it on like it, and I was in there and got it warm with all this snow. Told me I had a drink out of it. But no, nothing warm.
I believe you had a story you were going to tell earlier about some cheese you were bringing up.
Yes, well, we didn't have the dump, and this was the first time I ever had it. We had... Cheese started coming out, but big rolls of cheese, heavy, sorry, it was a roll. And we had to take that up into the dump from 4 miles, 3 or 4 miles away, carried up the trenches, you see. So in Kemmel trenches, this particular, I got the cheese, another fellow got a box of the biscuits and that, and we got to go along the trenches at a kind of a V shape, and it was full of mud, mud and dirt and filth, and or you either got to go through that, which you've taken to go to the headquarters, the company headquarters, where they had to dump this cheese and stuff, food. To get there, you'd have to go through about 300 or 400 yards of mud, squeezy, dummy mud. Or you go over the top, the trench of the V-shape, like coming down like that, see. Or you go over the top here, cross over and get into the trenches there, see. So I said, shall we chance it? This fellow, it was between the two lines. So you get off, it's almost on, and walk through this damn muddy, you can't get through. How are we going to get through this cheese? So we said, I don't know. So I said, so we got over the top, and took quite a bit long, as between the German land lines. There's only about 100 yards away, so it's that. And walked along. Suddenly, when they saw something moving up, and suddenly he sent out the star shell. Of course, it lit the place. I dropped out of daylight. And I was there, I was like this, a bit down. I said to him, keep perfectly still. Don't move. I said to him, and the and in the arm like I had much and everything. So we stood down like this. I got this cheese between me, they went down like, didn't we? This tar shell went up and dropped within a yard of me. And that stood there,